Okay, you should have your Bibles open to the 139th Psalm once again. And in our last lesson, we looked at a little bit of an introduction and a general breakdown of what would be considered an outline of the Psalm. And in this session, what I want to do is I want to start looking in some detail, at least, to the first major virtue that David extols here in this Psalm when it comes to sonship prayer and having his heart searched. And we find that in these first four verses. And this is the virtue again of, as David's going to use this magnificent expression, God becoming acquainted with him, which is a really odd thing to say about God. If God's operating on his omniscience and knowing everything and his omnipresence being everywhere at the same time, that he would use such a term as acquainted. But that is one of the great virtues of the sonship life, of the opportunity. And it's not, again, you've got to arrest the idea in your mind that this is in some way handicapping God, that it's some way less than how God could operate. It's how he himself set it up. He determined that that's what he wanted, a real relationship with you as his son and daughter. And so God becomes acquainted with his son by means of this real father-son relationship, and God is going to come along and be able to evaluate the growth of his son by the son telling his father what's going on with him. God actually listens to everything that you say to him. And by this communing and this fellowshipping with him in sonship prayer, the son is telling his father what's in his heart. And then the father knows his son's heart by that communion and fellowship. And again, I'm not saying that God can't know some other way, or that in some other context God could utilize that omniscience and omnipresence and whatsoever. But what I'm after is that in the relationship between a father, son, father, and daughter, this is how he's determined to operate. And that's why we have the first four verses here in the psalm that says, O Lord Jehovah, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Notice again, verse 4 tells you why everything David said in verse 1, verse 2, and verse 3 can be said of a truth. That verse 4 begins with a 4 of further explanation and amplification. So David is going to explain why it is that God knows his downsitting and his uprising. And there's an expression you don't hear too often today. I don't think too many of us talk today about our down-sitting and our uprising. You'll hear it sometimes. You'll hear it actually more in the South than you'll hear it in the North. It's not fallen completely out of use. But why is it that God knows all about that? What, David's going to explain why God understands his thoughts from afar off. Thou, by the way, that's really not true according to the accuracy of what David says there. I don't know if you've thought about this or not, but he doesn't say, thou understandest my thoughts afar off, plural. He says, thou understandest my thought afar off. We'll note that. But the reason why God does that and is able to understand that, just how it is that God could come along and, as he says, compasses his path and is lying down, how it is that God has become acquainted with David's ways, all that is according to verse 4. How is that possible? Is it based on God's omniscience? No. It's based because David told God about it. One thing David did constantly was talk to God. And I know it sounds like a very elementary thing, but all you have to do is kind of sit down here, and I don't mean to shame anybody, but just sit down and think about how much you talk to him today. And hopefully you'll say, well, the day's not over. But David tells you in no uncertain terms that everything I say in verse 1 and verse 2 and verse 3 there is only possible because I've told God all about it. He told him about his downsetting and his uprising. He told him about his thought and about his path and his ways. That's why he says what he does in verse, for there is not a word in my tongue, but O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. And that's very clear there. It's in my tongue. It's not in my mind. David says, you listen, you hang on every word I say. Don't you wish that when you came home every day, you got the response from your husband or wife that you get from your dog? It's just like they hang on your every word. Like a dog is like, I've never seen you before. And you may have seen it just 8 hours earlier, but it's like, blah, you're just the greatest thing in the world. I heard one guy once pray that way. Oh, Lord, please make my wife treat me the way my dog does every day I come home. But that's the reality with David is God was, he was hanging on his every word. He explained to him, his father, about his downsitting and uprising, his thought, his path, his way. The words in David's tongue, David talking to his father in sonship, prayer, communion, and fellowship is what made it so that God could come along and God could take what David had told him when he had poured his heart out to him and put together a package of understanding about David's day. That allowed God to do that, to put the whole package of how David's day went. And so that he could assess and evaluate what his heart was about and what was going on in his heart. And so that's one of the major aspects of what's going on in these first four verses, folks. David's describing, you want to see a day in the life of the king of Israel? You get to see it here. And some people will read that and say, it doesn't sound too exciting to me. I'd rather be out there chasing devils. Whatever. David's thrilled with this. And in fact, God himself, the Lord, the Father, David's Father is thrilled with this. And David's day is exactly what he's talking about in these first four verses. He's going to go over his day with God. And that's all you've got. You don't have yesterday anymore. It's given up to eternity now. And there is no way that you're going to get to tomorrow any faster than time is marching now. You don't have tomorrow. You're not guaranteed it. You're not guaranteed your next heartbeat. But the fact of the matter is, you've got this day. And that's what David is talking about. Look at verse 2. He says, thou knowest my downsitting and mine uprising. What do you think that's a reference to? Sleep and awake, yeah. Actions. It's talking about, but yeah, it's in that particular order. My downsitting and mine uprising. It's kind of, you know, getting up and going to bed, but I think we can get it a little more clear than that. When you use that expression down sitting, it's just not going to bed or getting up from bed. When you sit down in a context such as this, where a father and a son in adoption is contemplating their day. That takes that day into an entirely different context, right? And I didn't expect a lot of rights there, but that's what you've been given. You've been given today, whether you think that a Wednesday is all that fitting for a day to do something like this. You have this day to be able to do what, primarily? If it were in any other context than this, then you, if you're just the ordinary average Christian, then you had today to kind of do your thing, and now you come to church at night to kind of do God's thing. But a son doesn't think that way. A son gets up and says, okay, I've got another day. To do what? The business that he was adopted for in the first place. And that's what you had this day for. And whether it got distracted with other things, or whether you gave it any thought whatsoever, that's what this day was for you in the context of your adopted sonship status. That's why when you go past Romans 8, 14 and 15, you better mean what you say and say what you mean, because life is no longer going to be just, well, I kind of do my thing and I give God his thing on a Wednesday night and a Sunday morning, and then I kind of do my thing the rest of the time. There is no your thing. You're his adopted daughter. You're his adopted son. And everything that you're going through is training for that. To do business together. And there was business to do today. I don't know what it was, because I don't know your personal life. I don't need to. And we're not going to have an old-fashioned testimony time. But you're not responsible to me to tell me how your day went. You're responsible as a son and daughter to your father to tell him how your day went. But this is what David's talking about in these four verses, his day. Here's a day in the life of David, the man of war of Israel. The greatest king that ever sat on the throne of Israel until Jesus Christ sits down on that throne himself. You say, well, Solomon was wiser. He may have been. But David, it's very clear what God does in the gospel accounts. He uses terminology there that he talks about Jesus Christ as David's greater son. He doesn't say he was Solomon's greater son. He was David's greater son. So here's a day in his life. Thou knowest my down sitting. When you sit down and do some real down sitting, what you're doing is you're sitting down to plan your day. Usually a morning event. But you sit down and plan what you're going to do and go out and accomplish for that day's work. Thou knowest my down sitting. David sat down with his father, and one of the things he would do on a daily basis is he would go over his day's work, his day's activities with his father. Here's what I'm going to do today. Maybe it took 2 minutes. Maybe it took 30. I don't know. But that's what a son does. A son realizes, I've got this day to live, not just to live as unto you, but I got work to do. And folks, you've got work to do. You've got 9 components of work to do, some of which are going to be done every single day of your life. Others are going to be more circumstantial. But there's some things on that board right now that you've been taught as a son that this day should have been about your father's business. And David went over that. Thou knowest my down-sitting and mine uprising. That's not just uprising to get out of bed. That's once we've sat down and I've done the down-sitting and we've gone over the plans for the day's activity, now I'm going to rise up and get to it. David says, you know what I planned for, and you know because of what I keep telling you, you know what takes place when I uprise and I actually go out and work and do the job, the actual accomplishing of what was planned for. And the son goes out and works together with the father in his father's business to get that day's work done. And that's what David is going over there in verse 2. The idea is David's come along and saying, God, having searched me through this real father-son process, you know what I sat down and planned for my day to be with you, because I told you about it. You knew what my plans were. You know when I rose up. You fully understand and appreciate what I did in accordance with that plan. We have business to do. Just like a natural son would do with his natural father when he goes to labor and to work with his father in his father's business. That's what the adoption of sons and daughters is about. So you take any business, and even if a son is just kind of on his first level of training with his father, at least he knows some things. And like I say, these are things that kind of seem mundane, but they need to be done. And so, well, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to get there on time. I'm going to one of the first things I'm going to have to do is go turn the close sign around to open. And then I'm going to go out and I'm going to take my broom and probably sweep the front steps off or the walk or whatever, and prepare get the business ready to open and these kinds of things, whatever is to be done. And if his father and him were sitting there and having a cup of coffee together or whatever, and they're down sitting, and he says, then I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm going to get the lights turned on and the machinery up and running, and we've got a docket of scheduled material that has to be produced this day, and that's what we're going to go do. And talk about that. That's what we're going to go do. So David could come along and say, you knew when I finally rose up and put all of that plan into practice. And it's the issue of the son now awaking with his father in his day, sitting down before him before they open up the business for the day's activity. And the father says, what's your plan for today? And the son then says, well, I'm going to, and he goes over the day's work, his work plans. And then the father says, okay, good, let's go out and let's get that accomplished now. And then the father observes his son doing that day's work. And he watches to see, did he do it? Or did he not do it? Did he accomplish what he is capable of accomplishing? Is he using what he's been instructed by me? He's not upset with the fact, for instance, that you don't know how to treat one another in equity yet, because you're not there yet. So you're not accountable for that. But you are very accountable for six components of wisdom and three components of justice, that there isn't a single detail of your life that isn't affected by something in that. And the issue is, are you doing that? Because there's a labor component to all nine of those. And so the father would assess, well, did he have problems? Let's hear about that. Did he accomplish what he was capable of? Did he do it well? Was he lazy? Did he cut corners? Or did he do things the way he was taught? Does this sound familiar? That I'm going to do things the way and because of the way in which my father taught me. That's why I'm saying what I'm saying and doing what I'm doing. I'm doing that, I'm saying that because that's what my father taught me to do and say. Or is there still most of your day you're doing things and saying things exactly the way any old man or woman of this world would say them and do them? And that when an angel would look at you, they don't see any difference between you and any other person of this world. Or when they look at you and listen to you, they begin to not see any difference between you and your Father. Well, the whole issue there, of course, is, are you doing things the way you were taught by your father, and therefore do you honestly contribute day by day to the success of your father's business? You say, well, I hope to someday. We're past that point. We're past it. You say, well, if I can just get this straightened out in my life, good luck. I've seen that and know where it's going to go. There's already a sonship commitment level that's dealt with all of this, and that is to make this the highest priority of your life. And if it's not, you're going to have problems. And if it's not, the first area this is going to occur is not going to be known. Maybe this will be something you'll like, but it's not going to be known by anybody but you. At first, you're going to be the only one that knows this isn't running right. And it's in that very private, intimate relationship with your Father in sonship prayer. Because a son who is a fool doesn't want to communicate with his father at all. He'd rather stay away from him. And you can fake out a lot of people, but you can't fake out him. Well, again, the communing and fellowship of a prayer of a son's prayer with his father is to make these evaluations. How'd my day go? All right, in light of what I've been taught by my father, and again, that's what we've done ahead of this, was this chart. In light of what I've been taught by my father, what I now know, here's what I'm going to now do. That's where the assessment, that's where that gets settled out. And if you think about it, this kind of intelligent sonship prayer is bound, it has to make real change in your life. This is one of the ways that real change occurs in your life. That it matters to you now what your day's been like, not just because you're satisfied with it or not, but that your father is satisfied with it. You're in business with him. You're laboring with him. You say, oh, no, I go to work and that's something entirely. No, it isn't. You're forgetting. Does the third component of wisdom not say, not slothful in business, fervent in, small case s, spirit, serving the Lord? You can't detach your sonship life from your workaday life. There's great training and benefit for you there. You say, well, you don't know my boss. Right, I don't need to. And you're free to change him. But the fact of the matter is, if your boss, who is in all likelihood, if they're the stinky, little, runty problem that you think they are, the fact of the matter is, ask yourself this question. Can that bird, and I've had bosses that were horrible, but ask yourself the question, that guy who may in all reality be an idiot, but he's still your boss. But ask yourself the question, can that little guy, and sometimes they're little guys, isn't it always the little guy? It's the short, little short guys. They want to beat up everybody. It's just something about short guys. They just want to try everybody on. They want to prove themselves to be the biggest guy in the pack. Can that little runt of a guy, with the intelligence that guy has, ask yourself this question, can he destroy Romans 8, 35 through 39? That little guy, you're telling me that little guy can destroy you being more than a conqueror in that situation. Is that the low assessment you have of God's Word operating in your inner man? No. Even in that situation, you can be not slothful, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. I pick on that one because all of you have jobs. And for you children, you don't get out of it either. That's your schoolwork. That's your job. Your job is to go to school and be fervent in it. That's your business. Your busyness, as we taught it when we were over there in it. And I'm picking on that one because it's probably as sensitive a one as I can find, which is what I'm trying to go after. You had a day today, and peradventure, you may get one tomorrow. But that's how he lived, folks. So if you think about it, this kind of intelligent sonship prayer is bound to bring, like I said, some real change in your life. And especially now that we've entered into this curriculum for our sonship education, with the instruction of wisdom and justice. You've got six areas of wisdom and three areas of justice that touch on every aspect of your life so that you can sit down, you can do some down-sitting and plan your day, whether it's briefly, and most days when it's just the routine of life, it is brief. I'm not saying you have to spend hours and hours at that. But however brief it is, that you do some down-sitting, plan your day, and you can ever be on the lookout as you do your uprising to go out, and you're constantly looking for situations and circumstances, for opportunities. That's what you want. You want opportunities to rise up and utilize that information and put it into practice in your Father's business, you and Him working together, and work together with Him in order to accomplish one day's business successfully. And say, what I did today, I accomplished successfully as a son would think and talk and live. Nobody may have noticed but my Father. Well, I can tell you, there is an innumerable amount of angels that noticed. I was talking to somebody the other day, how thrilled they must be and the creature must be as we're gaining our understanding of this education and being trained to one day be liberated from the bondage of corruption it's in with someone who can bring godly loving selflessness and loving kindness and tenderheartedness and meekness into that realm for the first time. And you had a day to be... It's not like, when I meet my next crisis, when the next tornado comes, then I'm going to really put on display what a son should be like. That is horse feathers. If you couldn't do it today, you won't do it then, I guarantee you. It's day by day, not to try to quote the old song. I never liked that song all that much. But that's what David is, that's how he views it. And so you can now begin to your day and plan it out. Plan, just at least in general, you can begin your day and plan out your day in view of nine components of the curriculum. And you really have, honestly, I spent some time there talking about one of them. There's nine on the board up there. And I can guarantee right now, because of what's going on in our nation, this one here is really going to be great. And you're going to be in situations with family, with friends, with coworkers, where what you say and how you conduct yourself is going to have opportunities, all kinds of opportunities, to put on display who you are as a son. It may be very quiet. It may be something they don't even get or goes completely over their head or whatever, but you're going to say and conduct yourself as a son would do so with that spirit which is of God. You really have a great deal to talk with your Father about day by day. Well, verse 2 goes on. I don't know if we're going to get through these four verses, but verse 2 goes on to say, "Thou understandest my thought afar off." Notice again it says thought singular, not thoughts plural. Now what does that mean? Thou understandest my thought. What's the difference between thou understandest my thoughts and thou understandest my thought? The process of thinking, yeah. That's not wrong. I think we can narrow it down a little bit. What's the difference there? We're not going to take a lot of time on that, but... Yeah, all of it together. And it's kind of like when David uses the word thought and not thoughts, you're talking about what is commonly called... you see it sometimes in like our daily bread or something like that, the thought of the day. And in that kind of a context, it's fairly meaningless. But when a son comes along and he says, Thou understandest my thought from afar off, and it's in the context of his day, of his down sitting to plan that day's activity. Your thought is basically your thought for that day. Your thought is the issue of taking all the information you've been taught, and you're going to form it into or formulate it into a thought. And that becomes your outlook. This is how I'm going to view my day. My thought for this day is to take that information and function as a son would function. And in other words, here's what I think I'm going to do today. And I'm going to have the opportunity to do this, and you can fill in the blank of what that is. And I'm going to look for those for these other opportunities. I know you could go to your father and say, I know I got to get up and go to work in the morning, so verse or the third component there is a given. That's going to be my thought for my business work for that day. But I may come into contact with an unbeliever and have an opportunity to the fifth one up there, to be given to hospitality and to start to produce an environment with that unbeliever that would be one in which I could give that clear and plain gospel of Jesus Christ, his death, his burial, and resurrection, because that's the need that's the necessity that guy has. I know Sunday, you know, when Saturday rolls around, Sunday comes along, you know your next day you're going to be getting up and going to church, so there's the first one there in wisdom has great application. The second one, heavens, there's all kinds of them up there. The sixth one, the fifth one, the sixth, there's part of the fifth one and all of the sixth one that also applies. This stuff isn't just stuff to take. And make sure, look, just because you've got a chart or you've got it written down in your notes and tucked away in your Bible, that's a false sense of confidence. I'm not saying that's not bad. I'm all for writing things down, and you know how big of a chart guy I am, and I'm not going to stop making them. But the confidence doesn't come in having the chart. The confidence comes in knowing the information, and you know how to utilize it, and you could take your Bible and put it away from you, and because it's in you, you know exactly how a son operates. Well, anyway, you can kind of come along and summarize by saying that this is how I think about, this is my thought about how I see the opportunities to take a particular course of action that an intelligized son would take. And you can summarize all that you've talked to your father about into this thought. And it's something that occurs as you're communing with him in sonship prayer. It's not that you're saying, notice that David doesn't come along and it's not him saying that, well, you God, you're God, and you know my thoughts. You know all my thoughts. By the way, that's not a bad thing. And that's not out of the realm of possibility for God to do. In fact, in another context, that wouldn't be at all wrong to say. It's not a bad thing, but it's not David's point. It's the issue of you understand my thought. And thou understandest my thought, and thou understandest my thought afar off. It's not that God is in your mind scanning you and rifling through all of your thoughts and knows everything that you're thinking even before you think it. Again, could that be true in another context? Sure. God has every ability to do that and can do that. And in some contexts, he does do that, but not with a son or a daughter. That's not what David's talking about here. The natural way for a son to end this day's get-together at his down-sitting and uprising with his father is to say, okay, look, based upon what I've been taught, and I've only been taught this far, which isn't much, but it's something. But based upon what I've been taught and what we've discussed and what I understand is right at this point, here's my thought about the day ahead and the opportunities that I hope to find in it, that may be found in it. And my thought is, that with wisdom and justice, I'm going to emulate you in all those areas. You take that and put it together as a thought. And you're going to see that as your heart enlarges, and as the curriculum enlarges your heart, and more pages get written upon your heart, that this thought becomes bigger and bigger. And that's just a natural way for a son to end his get together with his father. And that expression of far off, David says there, is extolling the fact that look, Father, you're not physically with me. God the Father in his body was not sitting bodily directly across the table from David. And I say bodily, and I know that from my old systematic days, there's a lot of theologians say, well, God is a spirit, he doesn't have a body. Well, I'm a spirit, and I've got a body. God does have a body. In fact, Ezekiel sees the Father in his body. And he calls him the Ancient of Days. And he's in a body on this earth with his Son Jesus Christ in a body on this earth. The two of them in a body on this earth. Which is a cheery thing for me because I want to hug him. I don't want to be hugging a spirit. I want to put my arms around a body. Can you imagine looking into the eyes of Jesus Christ one day to be able to thank him for what he did, and standing right behind him is your father, and for the very first time you get to see his face, you get to see his eyes, his hair, his features, his dimensions, and you can't keep your hands off of him. You just want to grab him. What a day that will be. What a day that will be. But David could say, this is so real and such a real relationship that thou understandest my thought afar off. And therefore, Father, you may not be physically across the table from me or sitting in the room with me like my natural father would be. But I've made my thought known to you. I have absolute confidence that you heard every word of it. You listen to every word. I can start my day knowing that we've had this discussion. You know my thought on the matter. You know what I've planned to do. And now I'm going to go out and start my day with that kind of confidence. And because of that, we've determined that this is a good and sound and honest plan for the day. And again, right now, it's just going to be basically surrounding the fact that I'm going to take this and use it. All right? That's a good plan. I don't think, Father, that I'm going to be in church today, so I may not be doing some of the things up there where the practical need offices are concerned today, but I am going to be doing this and that. And it forms this is my thought for the day of how I'm going to go about my day. And now search me and connect. Now right now, again, it may not be that these things are at a critical point in your life where real critical matters are being determined between various paths to walk and all these kinds of things. And maybe some of this still is a little bit theoretical right now because of where we are in the curriculum. But it's good that we talk about it because it's going to get right down to that when we get into Romans 13, 8 and following. It's going to get right into the meat of that because that's where judgments are going to have to be made. And so you settle out that. And again, it could be very brief, the time that you take, but you settle that out, that it's a good, sound, honest plan. Well, verse 3 then comes along and says, thou compassest my path, my lying and my lying down, and art acquainted with my ways. And again, here's David moving into the activities of his day, and he's extolling his father's appreciation for all that takes place through his day, again, because verse 4 tells you, David tells him what's taking place. He says, thou compassest my path. You used a compass in school, remember? You scribe a circle with a compass. It encircles you. And if you compass something, it means that you go around it 360 degrees. You've completely gone around it. You've inscribed it. And you go around it One of the reasons why you would encompass someone's path when he's you're going to want to you're able to look at it from every possible angle. You can go around it to see it from every angle, and through David going over this with his father, his path, and he does so till he lies down. Now compasses my path and my lying down. Now we're putting the day to bed. To his lying down, he's looking now at the entirety of his day, the end of his day. He went over it with his father. The applications then at the end of the day is to once again go over what occurred in the day, what was learned in the day, lessons learned. Go over with the father the application of the details of what you're responsible to know. You're not responsible to know Ephesians 6 right now. You're responsible to know that. And operate accordingly. And then speak to your father about it at the end of the day. Before you put that day and commit that day to eternity, you're going to go over it with your father, and just like a good father would do at the end of the business day with his son, well, what got done? I remember, what was it, that movie, The Patriot? When the main character had sent his sons out to do some fence mending. And when they came back, he knew they hadn't done it. He could tell by the way they looked. He said, isn't it terrible how a pond just calls to you in the heat of a day, but you don't get today's work done? Something along those lines. And those things are gone over. And if it was like his father was, it's like his father was right there walking around him, encircling him, seeing every angle and understanding and seeing to understand it perfectly. David's path, that's his activity of his day. His lying down is the stopping point. I have this path that I walk this day until my lying down. That's when I stop. So at the end of his day, David tells his father, look, here's what I did. Here's how far I got. I either accomplished everything I thought I might be able, that my thought was for the day, or I didn't. I didn't have certain opportunities, so I didn't have to use some of the things that I was anticipating using. So I didn't get to that. Or maybe it could be that I didn't get accomplished anything today. Nothing. It's a zero. It wasn't a productive day in our business together, Father, at all. All right? Tell him. And that's just the honest truth of it. It just wasn't a productive day. But that's all part of being accountable. And this makes you accountable. He's not giving you this just so that you can get a sense that you know more than the average bear. Or like this church often gets accused of, well, your church thinks it knows everything. You have no idea how little I know. And the more I learn of God's word, it makes me so small in what I know that I almost want to resign being a pastor. That's how little I think I know. Now, in comparison, I'm not comparing myself to other pastors and your average pastor, because they're not even in the same ballpark. They don't regard the Bible the same way we do. Oftentimes, not every time, but oftentimes. But this does hold you accountable. And that's got to be an honest part of your sonship prayer life. And having your heart searched. That's what's so essential about it. But you shouldn't want to go very many days like that. You shouldn't want to go very many days in a row and say, well, this was a bust. We didn't get anywhere in the business today. I didn't represent you out in this world. I wasn't conform. I didn't act like, talk like, or walk like a son at all today. You don't want a lot of days like that. You want to try to cut those down. But the truth is, every day is a day that calls for you to function as a son in every detail of it. And you need to hear that. You need to honestly face that. And every day your father wants to hear all about it, observe it from every angle as if he was encompassing your path. And David's extolling that. And by the way, with all David's failures and successes, he says, this is a great thing. This isn't a bad thing. This is the greatest thing of all. That you, God, the Lord, Jehovah, that my Father would understand everything that I got accomplished because I told you about it. And you listened to me, to every word that I said. And by the way, that holds you accountable day by day. But good day or bad, successful or failure, the point is that your Father wants to hear about it. And it's better to have an honest dialogue with him rather than just to ignore the whole thing. He won't throw stones at you. He's not going to come along. You're not going to hear this heavenly sigh. Or see him rolling his eyes at you. Don't detach any of this from what we went over in Sonship Establishment in Romans 8. You have an advocate when self-condemnation can take place. The Son himself stands at the right hand of the Father and makes intercession for you. He knows. And he makes an intercession of help in your behalf so you can pick yourself up. Say, all right, the day was bust, but tomorrow's coming. And if at peradventure I get tomorrow, here's my plan. And that's sonship living, folks. Well, again, your Father, he's all this. He's selfless and kind and tenderhearted and meek toward you as well. So there's not going to be any throwing stones at you and kicking you and saying, why didn't you get this done, or whack and crack you over the head or anything like that. He knows you know what's been wasted. But he also knows you know, as a properly oriented, established son, how to pick yourself up, that he and his curriculum has already planned for that. He's already written it into the Word, so that those times of failure, those times where things didn't get done properly or at all, that proper recovery can be made, we can move on, let's just pick up and get going, and he's just as delighted to do it, and he's not going to hold it over you. 5 weeks from now, he's not going to come to you and say, you remember when you did that? People talk about, throw that back up at me, will you? He doesn't throw it back up at you. Well, we're not going to get to the end of this, but verse 3, I think I'll save the ending of that for Sunday, but that's the real kick to all of this. The kicker is, it ends by saying, and art acquainted with all my ways. And that's the, in all this psalm, If you look at that as the context of extolling God's omniscience and omnipresence, that's the odd man out, the word acquainted. And I got to be honest with you, I haven't even checked the other translations, what they do with that word. I don't know if they keep it or throw it out. But that's the word that tells you acquainted. Man, I get people who write me letters on the internet who've never met me before. And one of the very first things I say to a brand new emailer, internet listener, when I write them back and they've told me a whole great deal about them and their circumstances, my first sentence to them is almost always, it's nice to make your acquaintance. And until that letter came in, I never knew anything about them. And that's the unusualness of acquaintance, being acquainted in a supposed context that is extolling God's omniscience, because God wouldn't become acquainted with anybody if he's operating that way. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that, and I've got just a few more things to say, but then we're going to move on through this, and we'll go through the, hopefully on Sunday, we'll be able to go through the next three big parts of this, and at least between Sunday and next Wednesday, we'll be done with the 139th Psalm and done with the review, and be moving ourselves back to Romans. We've got one thing we've got to accomplish yet, and that's the pre-doctrinal exhortation. But we're going to turn our attention away from review and toward getting the instruction of judgment. So we've just got a few more classes in this, but again, maybe you can spend some more time in this psalm between now and Sunday and just continue to familiarize yourself with it. And it's such a great psalm, and it's one that I think you'll go back to a lot of times to remind yourself, at least in the beginning, of what that searching of the heart is about and the greatness of the privilege you have to engage your Father as a son in sonship prayer. It's really a privilege of God's grace to do so. Well, we'll stop right there, and we'll pick her up then on Sunday morning, finishing verse 3 and going on through some of the little details of this psalm. With our heads bowed then, Heavenly Father, we are grateful to have this magnificent